Oregon rolls UCLA Saturday night in the Rose Bowl, 34-13. Dominant early. Five straight drives resulting in scores, kind of feeding off of what Oregon did against Oregon State. And I think that's one thing that everybody was hoping to see and kind of looking forward to was, all right, can the Ducks have a complete performance start to finish, you know, after such a good game against the Beavs in Corvallis? We can't say that it was a complete dominance from start to finish on both sides of the football against UCLA. But that game was never in doubt and never in question.
No, there was never a moment as an Oregon fan where you were like, are we in deep water? Aside from the very first drive for UCLA of the game, which they drive all the way down and they kick a, what, 30-yard field goal?
Yeah, 12-play, 66-yard drive.
That defense absolutely shut them down. They had half of their yardage on one drive. After that point, that defensive line was flying around. They were in the backfield the entire game. The DBs were latched onto wide receivers. Garbers couldn't find an open target. They looked great defensively.
At times they picked on Nico Reed on the outside, but I will say sometimes it was just receiver making a play. Teams are not throwing to Jabbar Muhammad's side.
I wouldn't. That I dude wouldn't was a lockdown corner, and he proved it last year.
He had two pass breakups in that game. One of his pass breakups led to the Tysheem Johnson interception. So teams are just not throwing there. They were forcing balls to Nico Reed's side, and everything was underneath and keeping everything in front. I thought the defense played outstanding. You mentioned that opening drive. That's your scripted drive. That is right. That's Eric Bieniemy, by the way. Former Kansas City Chiefs offensive coordinator.
I believe his full name is Eric Sleeping With Bieniemy.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Chris Berman. But what we saw early on that first drive, we saw a lot of Kansas City Chiefs-esque manipulation through motion to create matchups, right? We saw the burst motion that they used with Tyreek Hill a lot, where number three got a couple of catches on that opening drive. They went 66 yards on that opening drive. Will Ortner, do you know how many yards UCLA had in total in the first half?
In total in the first half, they were
66 on the first drive.
80-something. I know what they had for the whole game. The whole game's like 172.
They finished the first half with 54 yards of total offense.
Went backwards a little bit, did ya?
Do the math on that. 66 on the opening drive, the first half yards total was 54.
Now look,
they had negative 7 yards rushing at halftime.
I realize that like Ethan Garbers isn't exactly a Heisman candidate, but when you have a former running back as head coach, and you have a former running back and a potent offensive coordinator in Eric Bieniemy as your offensive coordinator, how does that happen?
Yeah, they ended up sack yards.
You don't have talent.
Sack yards. I mean, Jordan Birch had a drive that looked like a highlight film in and of itself, where he had the sack, a tackle for loss, and then he got in on the play on third down and long. Didn't get credited for a tackle on it, but he was like downfield, like 8 yards downfield. He was all over the place.
Making big plays.
He really was. He was a wrecking crew. Derek Harmon continued to be, as advertised, the Michigan State transfer. He's got a big game this week with his former team coming to town.
I don't think this is hyperbolic, but as an offensive lineman, to me, the best player on Oregon's defense is Derek Harmon, because he's right in the middle of that offensive line, and every single week he has 1 to 2 tackles for loss. He's in the backfield, and he can rush to the passer. When you have a 3-tech that can actually rush the passer and get sacks, or at least get multiple QB hurries, that opens up so much for your defensive ends. It allows Jordan Birch to be one-on-one against a tackle instead of getting chipped by a tight end, because they have to waste the double team on your 3-tech, on your defensive tackle. Or in some cases, Harmon's big enough to where he is playing that nose guard position and he's over the center. When you can get a push that's right in the quarterback's face and he sees it, that makes him scared. That makes him more likely to move around in the pocket. That allows the other pass rushers to get after the quarterback. Oregon has a lot of sacks right now, But how many of them have been like schemed up sacks? How many of them have been Dan Lanning and LaPoy sending a fire from the boundary where you're adding a linebacker and a nickel coming off the edge and they just confused the other team? It's not much. And it's because
one
guys like
from Brandon Johnson against Boise.
Right. Aside from that, that's Derek Harmon. That's Jordan Burch. That's Uy Ungalale. That's Tatum Tuioti. Just winning one-on-one matchups.
Yeah.
That's huge.
And this was the upfront. They've been really good. And I said this after the Boise game because you were watching that game. And if you go back, Genty is so damn good. We'll talk about Ashton Genty today.
Understatement of the year.
But there was something that was happening in that game that I came away from it going, there aren't very many backs who are going to be able to do what he did. Where Derek Harmon was jumping the A-gap so quickly against Boise, he was in the backfield, and Genty just has the ability to put his foot in the ground and just get through that. But he would weave around, and when you get that much penetration that quickly, it leaves a gap. It leaves a hole in your assignments, right? And Genty, I just watched, there's like two or three plays where Genty ended up like getting a big gain or scored on one of them, where I was going, I don't think there's very many, if any, other backs in college football that can do what Ashton Genty just did there.
Right.
And that cost Oregon dearly.
Well, he just had a couple of big burst plays.
Well, yes. No, I'm talking, there's one on the goal line too, where it was just like he scored and I went, that was a really good, everybody else was in their spot, and Harmon did a really good, it was almost like he was timing up the snap too quickly.
Genty's ability and vision to, his vision to see what's happening before him and then cut is why he had a big game against Oregon. Like, most of the time when you see big runs like that, it's because someone or multiple people got out of their gaps, right? You have a D end and an outside linebacker both in the C gap, running back hits it B, and so no one's there to cover. There were multiple times where you look on the replay, the Oregon D line, the Oregon linebackers, they're in the right spot. He just makes a couple cuts, breaks a couple tackles that I don't know if I don't know if NFL running backs, at least not the middle to bottom tier, are making those moves.
NFL running backs are watching him on Saturday night going, that's an NFL back.
A-Chain
said it. He's like, that's an NFL back playing in college right now.
100%. And so I think that at times people's perception of that defense gets skewed because of that game, right? Because if you look at it, the most talented team, the best team that you've played is that Boise State team. And it was close all the way down to the wire. So they look at the D-line and they go, well, they're good, but when they go up against a ground-and-pound offensive line and team, they struggled, which that's what the Big Ten is known for, right? Hey, ground-and-pound, we're going to beat you up. We play man football here. Mm-hmm. We don't throw the ball. They were able to do that because they have a special running back, and you're not going to see another running back of his caliber. The closest you will see are the two at Ohio State.
And Michigan's.
Well, yeah, Mullins is pretty. But again, those three running backs, maybe 85% of Genty. I mean, if Genty is playing in the SEC or in the Big Ten, he's the Heisman frontrunner right now, and it's not close.
And I think their offensive lines are going to be better. But
fair.
Travis Hunter is doing incredible things. Like, what he's doing is bat-ass crazy.
Yes.
We need to talk about that, too. Well, maybe we'll do like a Heisman look-see-loo.
I was going to say, are we just... Good thing we got two shows.
Yeah.
There's a lot to talk
about. But back to Oregon's defense, instead of just singing the praises of Ashton Genty, because he's really good.
Right.
That was a complete performance from start to finish. I know that there was a couple of runs to start the third quarter. UCLA kind of popped. They got back into it. But when you are up at the half, 28-10.
Really should have been 35-3.
It should have been 35-3. But when you are up by that much and the other team is running the football, you're gonna take that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Waste your time.
They wanted out fast.
They did. And I felt bad for Ethan Garbers. He had an ankle injury, it looked like a shoulder, bounced his head off the turf. He was getting roughed up in that game. The defense holding UCLA 1-10 on third downs, negative rushing yards at the break. You end up tripling them up in total yardage in the game. And I thought a twofold here. One is of concern, the other is not. But I think two things happened to Oregon's offense, especially in that third quarter. You saw him start to open it back up again as the game went on. But Terrence Ferguson going down and having the injury he got, I think that you look at it for targeting. I don't think it was a malicious hit, but that Brian Addison gave Terrence Ferguson, it was obviously everybody tries to hit somebody hard, but he didn't lead. I thought with his helmet, I thought he was going with his shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
They did go high. And if you ask any receiver, I mean, you would probably say I'd rather get hit high than low. And they're two very tall individuals. Addison is like 6'6", Ferguson 6'6", right? So they both are up there. That injury, though, first, I love Dylan Gabriel going and mixing it up. Because the thing I disagree with
Addison's face
is Addison was celebrating over Ferguson as he's lying on the ground, like, twitching. And then one of his teammates is signaling to the Oregon staff, hey, we need medical staff
get out
over
here. Yeah.
And so Dylan Gabriel getting in his grill, I love that. That was great. But I think when Ferguson went down, you saw Dylan Gabriel locking onto Tez Johnson a lot more because the two safety valves for Dylan Gabriel all season long have been Tez and T-Ferg. And that is of concern because he just has an innate trust in both of those guys. Mm-hmm.
Well, and they've earned it, right? Yep. Like, when he's needed them in big moments. I mean, right now, your MVP for the offense is Tez Johnson.
Mm.
He has a touchdown in every game. In this one, he has multiple. And that's why he has the 14 targets. Now, you and I were talking about this in the pre-show as we were getting ready. You know, how do the other wide receivers build a trust so that they can become that next person? Like, if Ferguson is out, we don't know if he's out or not, but let's say he's out for the Michigan State game. That's a great opportunity for Holden or for Evan Stewart to then take over in that role as like the second safety valve. And that can lead to more success for the team as the season goes on. But if I'm Trayshon Holden, if I'm Evan Stewart, I'm with Dylan Gabriel after practice every day. Like, what are you looking for on this play in the film room? What are you trying to get out of this play that we're going up against this look? And then I'm running extra routes with him so that he can build that comfort and that chemistry. Because if you can see those two take that next step, because Holden's had a couple big plays that have been on slants that he's taken to the house, he can do that on those deeper routes. Evan Stewart, he has all this hype coming in from his transfer from Texas A&M. He can make big plays. If you can get those guys on the same page with Gabriel, it'll then open up Tez Johnson more. Mm-hmm. But I also think you're going to see the explosive plays, which are just starting to come to the fold the last 2 weeks because of the improvement of the offensive line, giving Gabriel more time to throw deep. You're going to see those explosives continue to go up and up and up, and this offense reach its true potential.
The other part of why I thought third quarter kind of lacked for Oregon is they just wanted to run the ball and get out of there.
Oh, 100%. It was 10 o'clock. I get it.
They were just trying to chew this thing up. Hey, we're going to run the ball. But the offense sputtered in that third quarter. They found a little bit more life in that fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
But the defense didn't allow a touchdown.
It was a great game.
The Dylan Gabriel interception, uncharacteristic, to say the least. I mean,
bad decision.
It was. And Tez slipped, but he was still covered. It's like the last person that you want to throw that ball to. You know, the guy who you just got into his face for just standing over your teammate that he knocked out of the game.
Right.
Former Duck who's yapping all game long.
He was keyed up for his revenge game.
It didn't go well for him because Dylan Gabriel threw for 380 or 280 and they rushed for 150 on him. So it didn't go too well, and that game was never in doubt, but he got his pick six, got the only touchdown of the day for UCLA.
Right.
That was the most complete defensive performance of the night, of the season, and Dan Lanning agreed.
Yeah, I thought our defensive staff did an awesome job, Coach LaPoy and the whole defensive staff. I thought that was our most complete game on defense. I also thought we had a good feel for what they were trying to do, too, and did a good job affecting the quarterback, stopping the run. If you're doing those two things, you got a great chance.
Yeah. I mean, they did both of them really well. Really well. Next up, Friday, Michigan State, but it was a 34-13 win. Oregon, all-time undefeated in Big Ten conference play.
Wow.
How about that?
Few can say that. Yeah. You know who can't say that? Ohio State.
Yeah, they can't. Michigan can't say that either.
That's right. They've lost. You know? They're losers.
They are losers.
Not Oregon. Oregon doesn't lose. Not in the Big Ten.
I'm looking forward to that game. If you missed it, the Ohio State-Oregon kick time has been announced. It'll be a 4:30 kick on Saturday, October 12th on NBC and Peacock. So there you have it.